A friend of mine, Jeff Buckingham, out in California, he says, the people are so grounded. And he has a beautiful ranch there in San Luis Obispo, California, and he raises commercial cows. And when you think about the future of agriculture and where we're going, it really is in the people. The people that we serve, the people that we work with, the connections that we make. You're humble in your endeavors. You're proud of your brand. You're proud of your product. But you're humble, value-based producers. You care about what you do. You want to do it honestly. You want to do it ethically. And you want to do it to the best of your ability. That's what agriculture depends on in America. That grounding of our senses. That grounding and understanding of what it is that you do on a daily basis. Scott? But it's no longer just what we do in America. You've heard the information that by 2050, there'll be 9.2 billion people on this planet. That's a big task, a big challenge for American agriculture and the world, quite frankly, to wrestle with. It's been said that we have to increase agriculture production by 70%. It also has been said that we must produce enough food in the next 40 years that we have produced in the last 10,000. How do we do that, given the challenges that we face? There are those that want Colin the chicken to be raised out on the 4 acres and named and hand-picked and all of that. There are those that want us to do it locally without any tools in our toolbox. They want to eliminate the science and technology that got us to where we are today. And in some cases, it's good for them to question, how are you doing what you're doing and why do you do what you're doing? I'm not against that. But they have to understand, we need science and technology to meet a global crisis that's coming. Oh, it's pretty easy for Americans to say that. We're obese. We can say, oh, yeah, this is what we're going to do. We can impose our will on our citizens, but what about the citizens of the world who cannot afford to eat what we eat? How do we serve our global community? Farming without economic incentive is gardening. Gardening will not feed the world. We must rely on science and technology to help us move forward. The greatest research, the greatest discovery is what we have to invest in if we're going to solve these issues. And they're complex. Make no mistake. They're complex, mind-boggling issues of how we will feed the world. We do it better than anybody on this planet. That's our task. That's our challenge. So as you look to the future, how will we do that? How will you be, as a beet producer, part of the larger solution? You have a global responsibility. And we take that responsibility very seriously. Scott? I had the opportunity when I was in grad school at Texas A&M University to have Dr. Norman Borlaug as one of my professors. Talk about being in awe of someone. Dr. Borlaug, in his research in science and wheat and in Pakistan and India and Mexico, helped save 1 billion people from starvation. The father of the Green Revolution, as you know. Dr. Borlaug was a 1971 Nobel laureate for his work in genetics. Dr. Borlaug, in my conversations with him, understood you must constantly work to discover. You must constantly work to grow. You must constantly work to learn how to do things better. He was quite the humanitarian. And by the time that I had had him as a graduate student, he was long into his career, recognized globally for all of his efforts. An Iowa farm boy. And you know what? It goes back to what Jeff Buckingham said. Because people in agriculture are so grounded. Dr. Borlaug was so grounded, and up until the day he died, he was constantly working on how to solve global issues. And I think if each of us has just a little bit of Dr. Borlaug in us, that little bit of curiosity that says, how can I get better? How can I improve on my operation? How can I feed a few more people? Be it because your business become more successful, or because your genetics got better, or because your customers put more pounds on the truck. How are you going to make a difference for the future? Scott? My dad, you know, and we've heard about dads today. Eric talked about his, and Kip talked about his. I want to talk about mine as well. Because in agriculture, the future sometimes depends on what we do now to affect, you know, to affect it. And my dad always told me, the measure of a man is his integrity and work ethic. He was an officer and a gentleman and a pretty damn good cowboy. We had commercial cows, cow-calf deal, and we had quarter horses. And that's what I grew up on, a small farm, small ranch. And that made me who I am today because of those experiences that he worked to provide me. Now, he hit that tough spot in the 70s and decided not to keep the ranch. He said, you're going to have to make your own way, son. And so I did. I went out and worked to make my own way. I traded horses and cattle, and you know, I was the guy at the sales yard clipping tails and curry combing off tag glue, because I'd buy them and sell them and get them back up to health and take them to the next sales yard. That's what I did as a kid. I kind of traded cattle, and I worked my way through. And you know, today I'm a professor at Cal Poly, and you know, I've had a beautiful career, 30 years. Of being able to affect young minds. At least I hope I did it positively. And I've had an opportunity to travel all over the globe. And I've spoken to audiences throughout North America and Canada and Mexico and people from the Middle East. It's been an absolutely wonderful experience. It's kind of interesting, though. In all that time, in all my career that I've been doing this, my dad never heard me speak. He never heard me speak. And it was just, you know, not that he didn't want to, it just never presented itself until January of 1998. I had an opportunity, I'll call it that, to speak in his hometown. We're originally from Alabama. My family, we bought a ranch out in California and moved there when I was a kid. But I had a chance to go back to his hometown and give a little speech. He was there, right there in front. Right there in front, man, he had on his best suit. All his buddies from the war in Vietnam and Korea, all the guys he played football with, they were all there. This place was jam-packed. I was nervous. Because it was a speech I didn't want to give. As the only son, I have four sisters. And I'm the only boy in the family. I'm in the middle. In January 1998, I got that call from my kid sister and said, Scott, we've lost him. Dad had a heart attack and he's gone. You see, I wasn't prepared for that. I don't know how you ever really get prepared for something like that. But I knew, as my father's only son, that it was my job to give the eulogy. It's a speech I didn't want to give. Because how do you capture in a few moments in time what your father meant to you? So in that little church, Methodist church there in Altoona, Alabama, with all his war buddies and football buddies from high school, I stepped up to the pulpit and thought, how can I capture his life? And so all I could think of is, what did he mean to me? And how did he live his life? Because I'm the embodiment of his future. And so I simply said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. My family appreciates it. My dad taught me a lot as a young man. And today I stand before you and want to let you know Some of you haven't seen him for years and years and years. But he's the same Joe Vernon that you knew. Because he was a man of character. He was a man of compassion. And he was a man of courage. He lived his life honorably. And with that, and taking my dad home to his final journey, I knew that going forward, as his only son, that I had a responsibility on my shoulders, the Vernon name. And I didn't want to give that speech, but I knew that I had to. And from that moment on, I've worked hard to have integrity and honesty and strong values in what I do. Because I'm a Vernon. Just as your family looks to you, what is it that you stand for? What would somebody say over your casket as you lay there in your best suit, shiny pair of boots? What would somebody say about you? And that's what I try to do, to live my life that way. In the future of the Vernon name, Scott. I have two boys. I'm blessed. I've got a 15-year-old and a 14-year-old. We show livestock. They show pigs and lambs, and we're getting some replacement heifers for them, getting them going. And we work hard to do it right. While winning is not everything, the pursuit of excellence is. And I work all the time with my boys. Guys, look, we've been blessed to be successful in the show ring. You've won. You know what it feels like and tastes like to win. Don't lose that taste. But never, ever sell out your values to get to the winner's circle. Because the moment you do, you're losers. You're losers. And you have our name attached to it. Just as you have your brand, your herd, your reputation. That's the future right there. Tell you a quick story about the boys. When they were little, they were in the same room and they had twin beds. And at the time, Connor was 6 and Kyla was 5. And I'm reading the story out of Dr. Seuss. I'm reading it, and all of a sudden, Kyler, the youngest, steps up and says, "Dad, what's that little hangy thingy down the back of your throat?" I don't know, it had nothing to do with the story, but that's what was on his mind at that particular point in time. And I said, "Well, you know, how it's a uvula, you know, how do you say that?" You know, and just as older siblings always are, they know everything, right? Any of you older siblings, you know everything. And just as I was about to answer and respond to Kyler, Connor jumps up and says, "Kyler, that's your testicles." I said, "Connor, no. You know, that's a little lower. But I understand what you're trying to do. It's tonsils. You're trying to think it's tonsils, and no, it's not. But the point of that little story is our words matter. And the choice of words matter. Just as Eric was saying in our social media pursuits and all that, choice, it does matter. Okay? And so I'm working hard to try to raise the next generation to have courage, compassion, and character. Scott? And we do this through FFA and 4-H and Junior Angus Association, all the associations out there. The youth need to be enabled to become the job generators for the job seekers. That's what we're doing in FFA and these programs. We're creating entrepreneurs, we hope, because we're going to need them, as you'll see here in a minute. Scott? But we have to be careful because the jobs that they're going to have are going to be different than the jobs perhaps that you had. I don't know, how many of you know Billy Crystal? The actor Billy Crystal? He was in this movie called Parental Guidance. And his role in that movie, he was a minor league baseball club announcer. And very good at his job. And actually, it was for the Fresno Grizzlies is what the movie is talking about. He was very good at his job. He was a throwback to the Vin Scullys of the days and all the great people who could announce a baseball game. But no matter how good he was, watch what happens to Artie Decker. Scott?
Thank you so much. Well, as the great Yogi Berra once said, it ain't over till it's over. Well, this Fresno Grizzly season is over. I'm Artie Decker, the voice of the Fresno Grizzlies. So on behalf of Brad Zolick and the late Gwen Foster on the organ, good night, everybody. Thanks for listening, and lights out, Alice. I love this job.
I'm fired?
I'm sorry, Artie. I'm changing everything. New logos, new uniforms, new music. All the deadwoods float in the sawmill.
I'm deadwood?
You're old school. You reminisce, and you tell stories. All our sponsors are for hearing aids, beds that go up and down, and scooters. Not the cool kind, the sad kind. We need someone who's wired in.
To what?
Facebook. How many friends do you have?
I don't have any friends.
Have you made any posts?
No.
What was your last update?
My what?
Have you poked anybody?
I haven't poked anybody.
Has anybody poked you?
No.
The thing is, Artie, even if you were connected, I don't know that I'd want to be poked by you. How many apps do you have?
I don't have any apps.
You don't have any apps?
No.
Everyone has apps.
I don't have an app.
Do you play Angry Birds?
Angry Birds?
Who's your favorite Angry Bird?
I don't have a favorite Angry
Bird. Everyone has a favorite Angry Bird.
I don't have a favorite Angry Bird.
Hashtag.
Huh?
When was the last time you hashtagged?
Are you out of your mind? What the heck are you talking about?
We need announcers to tweet.
I'll tweet. I'll make whatever noise you want.
Sorry, Artie. My mind's made up.
So, the question becomes, are we living in the past without being able to recognize the shift in the way we can, you know, carry on conversations with our customers? And while Artie was, you know, he was being outsourced to someone who could do that. We have to look at ourselves sometimes and say, are we telling the old same stories? Are we still relying on the same methods to promote our herds, to promote ourselves? It's because we've always done it this way. Is that what we want to do? We've always done it this way, so let's keep doing it this way while the rest of the world is going ahead of us. We have to concentrate on the future. Where's the future going? Really, it's kind of, you know, with that social media. It's not the future. It's here now. It's been a dramatic paradigm shift in the way we do business. It has caused major companies to go bankrupt because they kept doing it the way they used to do it. It now puts the control of our message in our hands and at our fingertips and with our smartphones. And we have to be able to utilize it. Now, the question becomes, do you do it or do you delegate somebody to do it? The jobs that we're preparing kids for today didn't exist 5 years ago. Social media managers, digital managers, all of this, that's where we're going for the future. And so that's what we have to prepare for. And we have to wrap our mind around it. And I know it's hard. It's hard. It's like taking a drink with a fire hose. Just a lot of information coming at us. But we can't sit there like a bump on a pickle and ignore it because it's not going away. The names may change, but it's not going away. And in a paradigm shift, we all go back to zero. And so now we've had that paradigm shift. Everybody went back to zero, and now we've got a new game of people playing into the future. And that's what we have to prepare for, Scott. And the jobs out there in agriculture, as we look at the future of agriculture, I'm here to say it's bright. In this economy, agriculture has been one of the brightest spots in this economy. We're growing jobs. In the next few years, we need 54,000 people, but we're only preparing 29,000. That's not enough. That's not enough people. So where are they going to come from? Well, they're going to come from your liberal arts schools, your humanities, English, wherever it is. They're going to come to the job. Next slide. As you look at the nature of the graduates, we're not doing enough, but we need more in management and business. 47% of the future needs are going to be in management and business. What are we doing to advocate to young people to go into careers in agriculture? Today, more than ever, kids are coming in the front door to colleges and universities because they want to major in agriculture, but they're coming from a different perspective. No longer are they coming from the farms and ranches. We still get those. And God bless the FFA, it has the highest membership it's had since ever, over 500,000 people. And so we're getting some interest in agriculture as a career. 27% in science and engineering, 11% in education, communication, government services. Agriculture and forestry, 15%. Young people are coming to agriculture today not because they had a farm or ranch experience, it's because they like food. They like to eat. And the media has piqued their interest in food, wine, and all things associated with what they eat. And so they're coming at it from a business perspective, they're coming at it from a science perspective, they're coming at it from an environmental perspective, and social justice. They want to do good. We're back to a generation of young people that no matter what you think, as enabled as they are, they still want to do good. And they see doing good by affecting how people eat. And so what can you do for the future is help to promote kids to go into agriculture. If you recall back in the 80s, what we had, the crisis of the 1980s. And what did young people do? They did what their parents told them. Run away from agriculture. And so in the 80s, we saw this mass exodus of young people. They said, I'm not going to get in that business. No way. Well, now we've got a shift back. We have people who do want to get into agriculture, and we need to help facilitate that. Don't worry so much that they don't have an experience or a background in it, but do they have an interest and an intellect to make a difference? And as Eric said, get that shaggy-headed kid that doesn't know anything, because he'll learn, and if he doesn't stay with you, he'll still go out and be an advocate for our industry. And we need all of those we can get. All of those we can get. Next. They care. Next slide. Next. As Will said, I started this group in 2009 as a result of HSUS and some of the policies and legislation that they were promoting in California. Prop 2, we've all heard of it. Prop 2 was fundamentally going to change the way chickens were going to be raised. And they threw in veal calves and pork production as well, but we don't have a big presence of that in California. But agriculture in California got its butt handed to it. 63% of the people in California voted to say, yes, I want to change the way chickens are produced in California. The rest of agriculture that weren't chicken producers go, uh-uh, I'm not getting there. And we, in essence, threw the chickens under the bus. We didn't see that this was a much larger issue. It's incremental legislation that's going to affect how you produce beef. They start with chickens. And so we started this group. I love farmers, they feed my soul. I understand there's a difference between farmers and ranchers. But consumers, they readily identify with the term farmer. And farmer is universal. The trust and the research that says citizens and consumers and customers trust farmers. But we try to do it different. We look different. We sound different. We do different things. They care about agriculture. Not all of these people in this picture come from agriculture, but they care about it. Our target audience is 14 to 24-year-olds in urban settings. Imagine what 14 to 24-year-olds in an urban setting look like. They do not look like us. They do not share the same values we share on the farm. Their body is their palate. They tat it up, they pierce it up, they do all kinds of things with it. But the one thing that we do share with all 14 to 24 years old, these kids, they ever want to meet. And they create a social experience around what they eat. They like to eat and drink. They go to pizza. They hang out with their friends. This generation likes to hang out. They're not afraid of work. And so now we have this group of volunteers all over the nation who are working to create conversations with their peers about food and agriculture. Our mission is to celebrate the choice we have in the marketplace for the food and those who produce it. Celebrate the choice in the marketplace for our food and those who produce it. The kids in the urban settings don't understand that we have a choice. They just go. But if we value choice and we value price and we value health and all of these things, let's make sure that it stays in the marketplace. We're not against organic and we're not about, we're not saying traditional. It's all good. There's a place for all of it. If you want to niche your product into an organic field, fine. If you can make money, go for it. And so that's what these young people are doing, and they're having to do it a little different. You must first get their attention before you can have a conversation. And so we have fun little things that's not politically correct all the time, and it would assault some of your mature values or judgment, perhaps. Okay? One of them says, I'm hot. We have little bumper stickers. I'm hot, I'm dirty, I farm. And they love it. They go, oh, that's cool. They get this, they put it on their computers, they put it on their notebooks, they put it on their guitars, they put it on their Priuses. And they think they're having a good time with it. We want to do for agriculture what Ashton Kutcher did for a John Deere hat. Ashton Kutcher, as you know, back in the day, he used to wear a John Deere cap. Kids in urban settings all rushed to get a John Deere cap. They didn't know who the hell John Deere was. But they all wanted to wear it because Ashton Kutcher did. So we're trying to add cool to agriculture. Our logo looks somewhat like a tattoo. It's based on some Ed Hardy artwork or tattoo art. We cross-promote in tattoo shops because they all eat. I'm not here, and the kids aren't here to pass judgment on how you want to live your life. You can tat it, you can pierce it, we don't care. But you still have to eat, and we want you to make good decisions that help us in agriculture. And so we've created these conversations. We go to colleges and universities nationwide to create an advocacy message on the ground of young people talking to their peers, because that's where the level of credibility is. I'm too old, I'm too gray to go and try to tell a kid how to eat. But you take one of these young people, sexy beasts they are, and they go out and they start talking. Could you imagine one of those girls coming up to you guys? I want to talk about food. Woo-hoo. Man, who had ever thought that you know, when you start talking about food, it could be sexy, it could be fun, it could be interesting. And so we create that, and we've got another one. We've got, you know, some stickers, and you're certainly welcome to come get some, take some home to grandkids, whatever. Come get them, because we're all about appreciating farmers. Now, remember back when I talked about the HSUS? What HSUS did, they appealed. They beat us based on emotion. We're trying to attack people based on logic and science. The fact is, we're losing the battle when we try to talk logic and science. They're showing graphic images, and they're appealing to the emotions of people. Oh, help the puppies and the kittens and these poor chickens. $130 million a year they're raising with that message. In agriculture, we say, but we have the science, and we've got the land grants behind us. They support what we do. GMOs are safe. People don't care about that. So we try to appeal on an emotional level. I love farmers. They feed my soul. You see, that's a different take. Food, and they feed who I am, my essence, my being. And that's what we're working to promote with these young people. And we're doing it on pennies and passion. We're not a heavily funded deal, and we work to make a difference where we can. And you can, too, to make a difference where you can on your future. And the nice part about that, as we consider our future, as you look around the room, you've got people who've got your back. You've got other members and other organizations in agriculture who are working to do the same thing, to get better every day, to make a positive impact on where our industry is going. It's always nice when you got people that have your back. Scott? Because I had a friend, his name was Lloyd, and Lloyd and I used to teach together, and he loved, you know, we'd go hunting, and we went to a friend's place in Texas, up in Mason, Texas, Walter Jankowski's place, and we were going to go deer hunting. So we drove from California to Texas, and Lloyd didn't like to drive, but he liked to sleep. So I did a lot of the driving, and so we're pulling up to Fred's place Walter's place, and there was Lloyd sleeping. And as I pull up through the gates of the ranch, and at all Texas place, anybody from Texas in here? We got a couple of Texans. You name everything. The pitchfork, you know, the hay fork, the plastic fork. All ranches have a name. So we drove through this big gate. You know, and on one side there was a barn, an old mule in it, and the other side, you know, a bunch of cows. You know, it was a beautiful place, and we up the red dirt deal, and we get to the house, and I just let Lloyd stay and sleep. That's what friends do. You know, I say, you know. So I went up to Walter, and I sit and knocked on the door, and Walter, hey, good to see you, Scott. Come on in. So I went in, we had a cup of coffee, and I said, hey, thanks for letting us come hunt. Really appreciate it. He said, oh, no problem, Scott, anytime. You know, very hospitable, very, very nice people down in Texas, and I enjoyed my time when I was at A&M down there. But he said, hey, Scott, could you do me a favor? I said, well, what's that, Walter? He said, well, you know, when you come up out there at the barn, there's an old mule that's been in the family for a long time. He's all foundered up, and he's crippled. And I just can't bring myself to put him down. Would you mind with your rifle putting him down, and I'll get the tractor a little later and take care of him? I said, you sure? He said, yeah. You know, I just can't bring myself to do it myself. I said, all right, no problem. So we said our goodbyes, and as I was headed to the truck, I don't know what overtook me, but I thought I'd have a little fun with this. So I jump in the truck and slam the door. Boom! Oh, Lloyd wakes up. What? I hit the... Boy, red dirt and chert rock was going everywhere. I said, I can't believe this. He said, what? I said, we come all the way from California to hunt a few deer, and what happens? Walter says we can't hunt. Oh, man, that makes me so mad. Get by that barn. I'll show him. Roll the window down. Well, I got that. Boom! Drop that mule. About that time I hear boom, boom. I look over at Lloyd and he goes, let's go. I got two of his cows. That's a lie. But it does bring the point full circle. The future of agriculture is bright. Why is it bright? Because we've got friends all over this nation that are working every day, just like you, to make it better. To make our futures better, not only for ourselves, but for our families and for our customers. And for those who consume our products. American agriculture is the greatest industry, and I know we're not supposed to say industry, is the greatest community on the face of this earth. Why? Because of each and every one of you and what you do on your operations. Scott, today could be a long row to hoe or a glorious field of cotton. You decide. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been my distinct honor and pleasure to visit with you a little this afternoon, and I want to say thank you and God bless you.